And I thought, well, once I consistently get to a point where I'm covering the same amount of money I'm making at my part-time job, then I'll quit the job and do the podcast. So I waited for that, which I highly recommend. I hear people kind of just throwing in the towel and going all in on their business. I think, oh, just go slow. Make sure that it's viable and you can really pull it off before you go throwing in your other income, I think.
Do you love your business? You should, right? Well, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business Coach podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love by providing tips and tactics, tools, insights, inspiration, all the good stuff to help you actually enjoy running your business. In addition to actionable tips and tactics that you'll be able to execute immediately, you'll also hear from creative small business owners around the world who've been able to sidestep the hustle and build a business that merges their passion with their purpose and provides a profit. I'm your host, Fiona Kalacki, founder of My Daily Business Coach. Let's get going. Hello and welcome to episode 98 of the My Daily Business Coach podcast. Can you hear in my voice? I'm excited. We're getting so close to 100 episodes. So today I am talking to somebody absolutely fabulous who's doing huge things for mental health and physical strength and just overall, I guess, connection that people have to one of the most life-changing moments in their lives. She is a small business owner who I'm in awe of from what she's achieved in terms of podcasting and her business, but also she's just such a beautiful soul, like someone who's actually really caring and really passionate about what they're putting out there. And that's exactly the type of people that I love to get onto this podcast. It's also interesting that if you're listening to this in real time, today is Thursday, the 13th of May, and that was my mother's birthday. And my mother spent most of her career as a midwife and a psychiatric nurse working with people who had postnatal depression. So it makes, like, I don't know, it's kind of serendipity that I have this guest on today's podcast. So today's podcast interview is with the brilliant Sophie Walker, founder of Australian Birth Stories. Now, Australian Birth Stories has to be one of the top most successful podcasts in Australia, with a counting of, I think, 4.7 million downloads. Yes, I did say million. So absolutely blowing everybody else completely out of the water. But more so than the figures and the business that Sophie's been able to build off the back of the popularity of her podcast has been the real change that she's seen in so many women and their partners who go through the birth experience. Change from feeling anxious and nervous and just unempowered to feeling inspired, educated, able to speak up for themselves in that situation and before and after, and also just feeling a huge community around them that's there to support them, with women sharing firsthand their stories of childbirth in Australia and overseas sometimes. As Sophie touches on in our interview today, she really started the podcast not as a business. She started it as a way of sharing stories, including her own stories of childbirth. Now, Sophie is a mother of three boys, and she started the podcast after the birth of her second child. She'd had a really traumatic experience the first time, and she'd gone away and done a huge amount of education, research, seen what's available, used a different pathway, and had a really lovely experience the second time. And I guess she wanted to go out and share this knowledge so that other women would feel empowered when it came to their own birth experience. Now, I'm actually appearing on her podcast, Australian Birth Stories, shortly, going through my own experience of having two children. And I definitely wish that Australian Birth Stories had been around for the first birth that I went through with my son, oh gosh, 8 and a bit years ago now, because at the time I just devoured shows in the UK, like One Born Every Minute. And I read so many blogs from women who'd gone through it. But I think there's something so intimate and beautiful about the spoken word and listening to the audio of women who are sharing, you know, some of their deepest, darkest moments, and also with that beautiful moments and moments of joy like they've never experienced before. So if after listening to our interview today, you are really inspired and you want to find out more, or perhaps you're in a situation where you're hoping to get pregnant, you are pregnant, or you just had a baby, then definitely go over and check out more about Sophie, as well as the guides and the courses that she offers over at australianbirthstories.com. And you can check out, of course, her podcast, Australian Birth Stories. But yes, I really enjoyed talking to Sophie, not just about, you know, the good stuff that she's doing and the way that she's really, really helping women and their partners and their whole families and communities as an extension get through what can be a very, very tough and dramatic and life-changing moment. But I also loved how she talked about business and how she talks about the real nitty-gritty of, you know, working part-time until you can build your business up to a stage where it's going to be able to support you. She also talks about having to figure out things like creating an online course, creating downloadables, building a website, when that wasn't initially part of the plan for the podcast. It's a really lovely interview. Sophie has a beautiful, calm voice and a really wonderful demeanor. And it was my absolute pleasure to chat with her. So here it is, my interview with Sophie Walker, founder of Australian Birth Stories. Welcome, Sophie. How are you feeling about life right now?
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I feel pretty good. It's a Monday, so I don't have my kids on a Monday. So it's always a bit more relaxing.
I'm the same. I don't have my kids on a Monday or a Tuesday. So, yep, I feel
nice
you.
Starting the week quietly.
It's so lovely. So many people listening to this will know about Australian Birth Stories, and we'll get into what that is and how you started it. But, yeah, can you talk us through how you describe Australian Birth Stories?
Yeah, so it's a weekly podcast that I run, and each week on a Monday, I interview a mother about her pregnancy journey, how she came to conceive, then how she felt in her pregnancy, and then how her labor went. So we just go right through. So each episode's about an hour. So it's quite in depth about each woman's journey. Yeah. And people now apply to come on the show. So it's a real mixture of some people you will have heard of, and then just everyday mums from around Australia.
Wow. And when did you start it?
I started on Mother's Day. So it's going to be 5 years old in the coming weeks.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And so I guess I'm asking everyone this because of the times that we're living in right now. But given we are in the unfolding life that is, you know, life with COVID, and definitely for some people listening around the world, I have quite a few listeners in India, and obviously they're going through massive hardships right now. How has COVID impacted, you know, Australian Birth Stories? Did it impact it? Did it not, because you're online?
Yeah, I wasn't impacted really. I feel really grateful. My family were all healthy and our incomes didn't alter. My husband's a teacher, so he had a steady income. And I actually probably had my biggest year over the last 12 months just because a lot of antenatal classes were cancelled. Particularly, I'm Melbourne-based, I know you are too. So, yeah, during the really full-on lockdown that we did, people couldn't get to their healthcare providers as frequently as they would usually, and they couldn't attend classes. So they turned to the podcast for a lot of that content. And yeah, I've got some online courses. So there were those kind of sales actually increased for me. So I sort of almost felt a bit guilty because I was doing better than ever, although I was still locked in with three kids and a husband. Yeah, but the business did really well over the last 12 months, so I feel quite grateful about that.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think you should feel guilty because, you know, what you're doing is so important for people. And I just felt for anyone giving birth last year, especially in Melbourne, or even not even giving birth, but on the IVF path. So many people that were impacted by the lockdown, and obviously that's happening all around the world. So I think, yeah, it's great that your business did well because it means more people got the help that they needed.
Yeah. I wasn't selling useless products. They were definitely educational resources. So yeah, I was giving back in that sense.
Yeah. And so can you talk about your history and kind of, I know you've got a master's, because people might think, oh, okay, you know, maybe you had a child and you decided to do Australian Birth Stories, but you've got so much more background than that. What sort of led you down this path?
Yeah, I've got a master's in public health, and I was actually in between children. I went back to work 2 days a week and I was working at the Cancer Council. So I was working in cancer research, so quite different to pregnancy-related topics. But I've always been really passionate. And I think even at a really young age, wondered whether I might be a midwife, and I'm not sure why I didn't follow that after school, but I didn't. Yeah, so I was working part-time and juggling having one child at home. My mum kindly looked after my eldest little boy while I worked part-time, and I was really an avid podcast listener then. I was listening to kind of American birth stories, and there really wasn't anything at that time that was Australian focused. And a girlfriend and I used to do a lot of stuffing of envelopes, sending questionnaires out to people. And while we were stuffing envelopes, we'd be like, you should do your own podcast and do an Australian one. And we sort of joked about it. And then I eventually sort of started. We also joked about, oh, wouldn't it be good if one day it like made you money and people were like sending you prams and things like that. So now whenever anything happens in the business, I shoot her a message and say, you'll never guess, but this is what's happened now. So it's been quite funny. But it was literally like a little side project that grew and grew and grew and then became a business and became my full-time job. So it feels, I sort of joked that I did my whole business backwards, and I'm still trying to rejig that, because I feel like nowadays everyone starts a podcast to promote their business, and I made a podcast which became a business, so it's kind of backwards.
I love that though, because it is a different journey, but also it would allow you to really learn and craft the podcast, and then I guess figure out what people most want to know, which is such valuable information before you start a business.
Yeah. And in some ways it was the right way, because I started it not wanting to make money. I started it just wanting to give back and to help educate women. And I was kind of my own, I guess in business terms, you talk about avatars and your ideal customer. And I was kind of that person at the time, because I was, a young mum working, well, not that young, but working and juggling kids and then trying to have my first birth wasn't ideal. And I was quite sort of surprised and caught off guard by that. So I did heaps of research before I had my second baby, and I wanted to try and recreate that for other women so they can have a better birth experience. And I guess ideally women to come to the podcast in their first pregnancy and not have to have a bad birth experience to go on and have a better one, just to start at a better place in the beginning.
Oh my goodness. And so it's funny that you said you might want to become a midwife. My mum was a midwife. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, she was a midwife, and she worked in the 60s in New York and all over San Francisco. And she grew up in Ireland. And she used to tell me that when she was training, they'd go out to these like farms in the middle of nowhere in Ireland, and they wouldn't even have hot water running. And it was really, really interesting. And then when we came to Australia, she worked as a psychiatric nurse in postnatal depression wards at the Mercy.
Amazing.
So, I really love what you're doing, because I think it's just so, so important. A lot of people don't have, I had my mum always talking about it and all of that. And my sister's a doctor, and she specializes in obstetrics and stuff because she's in the country. And I guess it's you use your country GP a lot when you're in that situation. So on that note, what was your upbringing like? Are your parents in the health space? Are they small business owners? Or I guess, because a lot of people can go through what you go through and have this hard experience, but they don't turn it into, a really big podcast and a really great way for other people to learn and get educated. Did you grow up in a family of health professionals?
Yeah, my mum's a psychologist. So initially when you asked that question, I thought, oh, she's not a small business owner, but she is really, because she now works. Yeah, she works for herself, and she mostly does marriage counselling. She does individual counselling as well. And she was originally trained as a nurse. So yeah, she's definitely come from the health space. And interestingly, over COVID, she's now just Zooming all her clients and working from home. So she is navigating her own small business in that way. And my dad was born in England and came over as like one of those 10-pound poms on the boat. That kind of messed up his schooling, because he moved when he was 16. So he probably sort of didn't do what he would have liked to do education-wise. And he ended up working in insurance. Yeah, so not from a healthcare background there, and he's since retired, but my mum's still working part-time, and then she's minding my youngest today, which is handy. I wouldn't say that they were kind of really, we didn't grow up with a lot of money. My parents separated when I was young, so my mum was a single parent for a long time, so she wasn't kind of running her business then. So I haven't come from witnessing a really strong kind of business growth, and we don't talk about business stuff around the table, where we really talk about our emotions and feelings more. So I think that lent itself to, I get a lot of lovely feedback about my interviewing style, and I think I have to accredit that to my mum and her psychology background of just being a good listener and creating space for people to talk.
Oh, I love that. I know it's a term that's bandied around a lot at the moment, active listening, but it is such a beautiful trait for people to have, and we don't all have it.
Yeah. And I think sometimes you go in to ask a question and then if you wait a little bit, then a whole nother story unfolds. And I think, oh, thank heavens I didn't interject there because it would have taken them off course. And because it is a longer form interview, I've got time to allow people to go right into the depths of their story.
Yeah. And I guess also what you're talking about, I mean, everything is emotional to some degree, but there's probably few things as emotional as having a baby. So when you started Australian Birth Stories, I know you said you didn't set out for it to become a business, but did you have kind of goals in mind? Were you thinking, I'm going to start it and, you know, I'd like this many people to listen to it, or I'd like to get, you know, a couple of people sending me feedback that it's helped? When you started it, did you have any kind of, it's got to achieve this or this? Or did you just start it and think, I'll offer my story and if it helps someone, that's great, but there's no real plan for this?
Yeah, there was definitely no real plan. I didn't have any targets. And it was, even though it was only 5 years ago, podcasts weren't a big deal here then. So it wasn't, everyone wasn't across what a podcast was. And people, my mum's friends and things still say, oh, she's a blogger. And I'm like, I'm not a blogger. it's more than that. But, you know, I didn't really have download targets, although we'll kind of get to tech later. But I use Libsyn. That's where I host my podcast. And you kind of, I think all of them chart how many listens you get. And you sort of look for the spikes where people download on the day and you want those spikes to grow. And they did kind of incrementally grow. But I wasn't kind of really hung up on that. I did the first kind of 10 stories are just me, my sister, and my closest friends. And I, you know, I wasn't really sure if a lot of people would listen or not. And I was badgering people to come on. I was like, I've got to release a show on Monday. I'll come over on Sunday night. We'll record your story and I'll put it up, even though I didn't have like a big fan base then. But I was like, I know I need to be consistent. And it's funny now because I've got over 3,000 applications of people wanting to come on. So I don't have to hound my friends anymore to come on.
Wow, that is huge. Yeah. 3,000. Oh my goodness.
Years of content. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You could just, oh my goodness, you could just farm this all out and have like 10 of Sophie.
Well, yeah. It's funny because I'm kind of the face of the brand and the voice of the brand that I could, yeah, do that and have more people. And people have offered to like, oh, I'll do it. And I feel like, no, I'll always be doing the interviews myself, but I can need to outsource a lot of other parts of the business, I think, so that I can just do that, which is a bit more like my zone of genius or, yeah, my best skills.
Yeah, I think the same. Like when it comes to social media, people are always like, you should outsource it. And I'm like, no, because I like writing, or my Sunday email, I like writing. It's my natural thing. So, yeah, I feel you on that point.
Yeah.
So you started it 5 years ago almost. You now have three children, am I correct?
Yes, I've got three little boys.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
And you started it after the first one was born.
No, I started after the second one was born. So I had quite I guess it was traumatic first birth, but we both recovered quite quickly, but it was a shock for me on the day. Then I did a lot of research and had a really great second birth with my wildest child. Doesn't really make sense that his birth was smooth when he's like so wild, but it's interesting. And yeah, so I started it then and I was still working and I got to a point where I thought if I can, I guess, touching on what you asked before, I guess I thought ideally if I can make money on some podcast ads and it covers the same kind of money that I'm making working 2 days a week at the Cancer Council, then I can do away with my job and just focus on the podcast. So I waited I probably didn't monetize it for about a year, I think. And I just kind of cold emailed brands and asked if they wanted to come on and told them how many people I had listening, which wasn't many at all in the early days. And I thought, well, once I consistently get to a point where I'm covering the same amount of money I'm making at my part-time job, then I'll quit the job and do the podcast. So I waited for that, which I highly recommend. I hear people kind of just throwing in the towel and going all in on their business. I think, oh, just go slow. Make sure that it's viable and you can really pull it off before you go throwing in your other income, I think.
Yeah, I did that. And I talk about this quite a bit that I didn't come from a wealthy background. I mean, we weren't, you know, there wasn't anything wrong with it, but I definitely didn't have like, oh, well, mum and dad can support me if, you know, this doesn't work. So yeah, I gave it 6 months of fully like actively finding clients before I quit my job. And I had everything lined up for at least 6 to 9 months after I'd finished so that I'd be getting an income. So I hear you on that point. I think it's so important that, yeah, especially now, and there's so much out there that's like, run a business, anyone can do it. And, you know, partly I'm sure I contribute somewhat to that, but I feel like I'm also trying to remind people that, yeah, go slow. It doesn't need to be 10x tomorrow.
Yeah. And I think also when you've got mouths to feed and things and people relying on you, you have to be sensible about that. And I sort of also witnessed people starting their business and outsourcing all the tasks. I'm like, no, no, you need to do it all yourself so you understand it first and you're not outlaying all the money that you're making and then, yeah, do it that way. But, yeah, anyway, yeah, you live and learn. It's interesting to watch people start from scratch, I think.
Yeah, really. And so you have now had millions of downloads and I'm just like, you can't see me, but I'm really smiling because I'm so excited for you. And that is just huge, especially like you said, you know, podcasts haven't been as popular here in Australia as they have been in the US and the UK. And even I used to work at Audible in the UK in 2012, 2013 as well. And I helped them, you know, launch into Australia. And even then, and that's only like, what, 7, 8 years ago, but it was such a big thing for people to listen to anything audio besides music. It was like, oh, how are they going to listen to audiobooks? So to go from, you know, people not really being into podcasts, for you starting your podcast, having millions of downloads, how does that feel, firstly? And also, what has it allowed you to do?
Yeah, I can't quite get my head around it really. Those numbers are just so big. I think, yeah, to date now it's 4.7 million downloads over the 5 years. So
what?
You can't think about that. Like you can't kind of quantify it properly in your mind. But it's amazing and I'm very proud. And it's allowed me over, I think, to about 2 years in, I didn't have any products to sell or anything. And I did seek out some advice from a business coach. And she said, oh, now's the time. I was going to make another podcast because I became really passionate and could see a real gap in the market about postpartum recovery and just going through it at the same time as well, just like going for the 6-week checkup. And they're like, yep, you're good to go. And then off you go with your prolapse and all the other issues that you might have. And you just have to navigate that yourself. So I really wanted to try and help educate and while I was learning myself, but make sure that everyone knew how to recover and how to take care of themselves and how important that recovery is, particularly in sort of the first 12 months post-birth to, yeah, have you on your best possible path into motherhood. So I was going to make a postpartum podcast, which was just going to be more work and I perhaps less opportunity to make money. So I decided to make courses then. So I've got two courses that I sell at the moment. So one's called Postpartum Life After Birth, and that's for audio interviews with healthcare professionals guiding you through sort of, yeah, women's health physios talking about prolapse and how to do your pelvic floor exercises and obstetricians talking about the challenges of newborns and reflux and tongue ties and all that sort of thing. So I made those two courses and, yeah, and then I started to make more money through selling those and I went on to make some free downloadable guides and breastfeeding guides. So that's how my shop sort of slowly grew and became another form of revenue. So I was getting money from the podcast. I just do a 60-second ad at the start of each episode. So I was getting money from that and then money through the shop. And then some Patreon supporters were also contributing. So I had kind of three streams going at that time.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's fantastic. And yeah, like I said before, it's really helping people with what you're doing. I have a beautiful group of friends that we have a book club together and a lot of us are mums and a lot of us run our own business as well or have a kind of creative pursuit. And we were talking about just, yeah, postnatal depletion and how you just never hear that much, you know, from a general practitioner or, you know, the stock standard kind of person that you see after birth. It's just expected that, okay, well, you're tired and you feel like crap and, you know, you might be a bit moody, but that's fine. You know, you're a new mum. Just deal with it.
Yeah. And it's that whole thing of because it's common doesn't make it right or doesn't make it okay because we're all just used to, yeah, running on no sleep and not looking after ourselves. Actually, the man that wrote the book, Oscar Serilac, wrote the book Postnatal Depletion. He's part of the course as well. So just helping people know, like, what blood test to ask of their GP and ask them, like, can you check magnesium and can you check these other minerals that perhaps wouldn't be looked at otherwise. So just, yeah, opening that up, that conversation, so important.
Yeah, amazing. One of my friends is actually seeing him.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. And so when you opened the shop or, you know, you worked with the business coach, did you have to kind of, like, how did you open the shop? Like, did you have a website for the podcast already and then you just sort of added some PDF downloads, or how did you kind of learn all of that? Because I'm guessing that was a little bit different to the work you'd been doing prior to starting the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I think you just have to put one foot in front of the other and not think about all the things. I'm in the middle of making another course at the moment and I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. It's like, no, you just got to put one foot in front of the other and do each task as it comes up. But I did other people's courses. So I did Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income. I did his podcasting course initially, done a few other of his courses that help support you, like work out how to, what to charge for your podcast ads and things like that, which I know you've got a fantastic podcast course now too, but there weren't many around then. So he's American, but I went with him. I actually had a bit of a full circle moment with him because I've since been on his podcast, which was pretty amazing because I used to listen to him back in the day and just learn all the tips and tricks. And then I went for the courses. Yeah, I just listened to other business podcasts all the time. People often say, oh, what other podcasts do you listen to? And I think, oh, you wouldn't be interested. They're all a lot of American ones. I listen to yours every week, but more recently. But back in the early days, I listened to sort of Amy Porterfield and Jenna Kutcher and a few people like that to learn, yeah, how to create online courses. And a lot of them, I'm just moving to Kajabi at the moment, but I'm currently on Teachable. And a lot of those programs teach you step by step, like here's how to set up your sales page, here's how to set up the front page, here's how you drop in your audio. So I just, yeah, went step by step by step. And then, yeah, and then once all that hard work's done, a lot of that's kind of set and forget now. So, yeah, it's a lot of kind of 6 months of intense working on it. And then, I mean, sounds cliche, but I do kind of make money in my sleep now. So I just wake up in the morning and can see, oh, you sold 3 courses overnight. So, yeah, it's nice from a business point of view that just kind of does its own thing now.
Yeah, I love that. I'm a huge Pat Flynn fan. Yeah, I actually bought his podcasting course. That was the first thing I ever bought to do with podcasting. And then I bought an intro track. And yeah, and then I never quite finished his course. I think I got halfway through and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna do it. And then I didn't, and I kind of faffed about for a while. But yeah, I love him. We were actually reading one of his books in my group coaching business book club. So yeah, I think Pat Flynn, I really think he's one of the few, oh, how do I say this in the right way? One of the few people in that kind of very high up business coachy world that actually seems legit.
Yeah. I often email him too. Like, he's quite approachable, I think, also because I've been kind of one of his star students now. But he just would write back to me. And I remember thinking, oh my God, he's written straight back, but he genuinely cares. And he's a family man, which he often talks about as well. So he's really talks a lot about how to blend kind of family life and not be a slave to your business, which is, yeah, a nice approach.
Yeah, he does. He seems really real. And I'll have to go back and listen to you on his podcast. Yeah. And so with everything that's happened, besides the shop part that you've sort of talked about and moving to Kajabi, what else have you had to do in the last few years to kind of up level? I guess, have there been anything that's been the hardest to learn? Like, you mentioned the courses. Have you, even the fact that when you said before, oh, I've just cold called people to, you know, advertise on my podcast, did you have to learn how to do that? Or did you just do that? Had you had experience in your previous career doing those kind of reaching out?
No, not at all. So it's kind of fun growing and learning as you go. But I feel like if you just, again, sounds a bit cliche, but if you're genuinely just yourself, and I thought this isn't going to sound like a press release or like a proper polished piece that you'd get that I now receive from a million people wanting to come on the show, like, here's my book that I've done and I'd like to talk about this. And I'm like, oh, that's how it should be done. But really I just send like, hey, my name's Sophie and this is what I've created and here's a link if you want to check it out and I'd love to showcase your products because I think they're a great fit and I'm just really natural and normal. And that has worked for me to date. So I just continue with that approach.
Yeah, lovely. And has there been anything, I guess, on the flip side, when you're getting, you know, thousands of people contacting you all the time, how have you learned to say no? Because I think that's a big thing that people, especially lots of my clients will go through, say people who have, you know, quite a huge following on social media and they'll say, oh, I've been asked to collaborate on this and it doesn't feel right. How do you actually, do you just say a straight out no? Do you, when you were first starting to do that, did you have anything kind of that worked that you'd advise to anyone listening to this to consider?
I think I said yes to everything in the beginning because you think, oh, it's so great to be asked. And then as your audience grows and things, you kind of get a feel for how things work. And I think, oh, okay, you're asking me to come to that event for free, but you know that I'll probably go live on Instagram and showcase it. And then, oh, really, you're getting $3,000 worth of free advertising. Yeah. And then you can also say that I'm going to be there. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you come to understand a little bit more of that sort of side of things. And I'm like, actually, I'm not going to organize childcare and go across town to that event. it's not really worth my time when I could be spending time kind of on the business. So I think balancing that sort of stuff out. And I've only just, like, it doesn't sound very nice, but I've only just kind of given myself permission to not respond to everything. I like write back to every DM, or have done for years, and write back to every email. And I think actually I just don't have the time and energy. And especially if it's something that's kind of, yeah, now when I say it out loud, it sounds a bit mean, but I think if it's really obvious on the website, like how you should do that, and I've pressed for time, then I'm not going to respond. I figure if you have a little bit more of a Google, you'll work it out. But perhaps I most listened to one of your episodes the other day about templates. I probably just need some more templates and a VA who can respond with a template. At the moment, it's still just me. So I just think, oh, I just don't have time. Yeah, balancing how much you give, I think, because it's such emotional content as well, when people pour their heart out in emails and or they ask for really specific advice or my opinion on things. And I mean, I've got a public health background, but I'm not a midwife or a nurse, so I never want to give out medical advice over Instagram DMs and things like that. So finding that balance of how much you give and how much time you give to each person is, yeah, it's always evolving. It's hard to manage that.
Yeah, I can only imagine that. Yeah, like we've been talking about, it's such an emotional, heartfelt thing that people go through. And also they're not going to go through it, you know, they're not going to go through a first time birth ever again.
Yeah, you get one crack at it. Yeah, so it's hard. And often people will say, have you got an episode on this? And I do just know all the episodes in my head. So I think, well, it is quite quick for me to go, actually, you need to look at episode. I don't know them by number, but I know them enough by name to do a quick search and send them a link. So I love when I have time to do that. I probably need to just designate time to sit down and go, okay, I'm just going to do DMs now, rather than looking at them all the time and think, oh, I've got 52 people wanting me to write back. And then that can kind of give me a bit of anxiety. But again, that's kind of time management. And I was going to spend this year focusing a bit more on creating systems and, yeah, templates and getting a VA. And I was going to, like you, have a bit of a year of health, but somehow it snowballed into a year of work. So I need to kind of pare that back. I've got 6 months to get it right.
And the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I said that, like, when I put out that thing about the year of health, I had a few people reply and say to me, it's your whole life of health. And I was like, I know. It's like, yeah, it's just like my jump start. Yeah, with the DMs, I was just showing, I don't know if it was my group coaching or another program the other day, examples of literally me writing back to people, because I would never get as many as you and not the same sort of content. But yeah, I'll have people that will send me something and I'll reply, and then sometimes they'll send their whole business plan in a DM and be like, can you review this and give me some tips? And I'm like, no, if you want to book a coaching session, here's the link. Good luck. And I don't want to be harsh, but it's also like, that's my time. Like, you wouldn't go to an obstetrician and be like, can I see you for 3 hours and not pay you?
Yeah. It's like, how did you totally run your business and then not respond when you pour all your time and energy back into a reply? I guess on the flip side of that, if you catch me on a good day, I'll send you a voice message back, and people love that. So it just depends how well behaved my children are.
I do that too. Actually, I sent someone the other day and I could hear my child sort of, when I played it back, I could hear him crying, and I was thinking, oh, they're probably going to think you're horrible.
Just neglecting your child. I wish you could delete them. You can't, once you've done them, they're like set there, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh no, you can hold them and a delete, like a bin comes up and you can delete it.
Oh, okay.
You sent it and they haven't seen it. You can click unsend.
Oh, okay. That's
but good. You don't know for sure if it unsends.
They got it in between.
So you talked about a business coach that you had before. Have you had many business coaches or mentors or any kind of even mantras or books that have really helped you build your business, let's say outside of Pat Flynn?
No, probably just podcasts, because I just feel like I'm always busy, and I'm not a big book reader in general. Like, I don't read a lot of fiction books, so I don't read a lot of business books either. I just listen to podcasts. Yeah, probably just, yeah, I don't, it's funny, you go through kind of seasons of people too. Like, I don't listen to Amy Porterfield or Jenna Kutcher anymore. Sometimes I think, look, I've kind of learned all the business stuff. I just need time to implement it. I'm not sure I need to learn more tricks. I just need to sit down and do it. So I'm trying to make myself listen to more fun things. I'm obsessed with Smartless at the moment. I don't know if you've checked that out.
No, Smartless.
Smartless. Yeah, it's a bunch of actors. Jason Bateman. Anyway, it's very funny.
Oh, definitely have to check
very
it.
Very funny. But mentors and things wise, yeah, I've only ever had one business coach, and I don't have kind of a set routine with her. I just kind of check in with her when I'm doing something. At the moment, I'm making a birth course called the Birth Class, which is coming out soon. So I've been spending a lot of time talking to her, and it's so nice to just have someone who's interested to listen about the business, because my husband just kind of glazes over in the same way that I do when he talks about his school children. So it's nice to have like a designated hour where I can just like brain dump all the things, all the concepts and ideas and all the things I've been doing, and have, and also have someone sort of accountable and have someone saying, well, you did say you'd have that done by next week. What's happening there? So I really enjoy that as well. That's kind of ad hoc when I see her. I'm not good at outsourcing tasks. I really need a good VA to help me with my inbox. And I edit the show myself. And I've looked into, I know there's a lot of different people that edit podcasts now, but the content of my show is so raw that I just feel like I can't give it to someone who says, oh, it's a bit boring when she talked all about her breastfeeding problems, so we'll just chop that back. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I need to edit them myself, even though that's probably the most annoying of tasks and most time consuming. Some episodes kind of take me an hour and a half to edit, but recently I had a really challenging one with a lot of interruptions and a lot of long pauses and kind of confusing bits that took me about 3.5 hours, and I just thought, this is not a great use of my time, but I can't kind of see a way out of that at the moment.
Yeah, I guess when it's so personal, I mean, I have a podcast editor, but I used to send him quite detailed notes, and then now we've just gone into a system where I don't send him notes, but it's very different. You know, we're talking about business. It'll be more if someone's coughing, if somebody's, you know, kid in the background makes noise.
Yeah.
Or if they've said, like if you'd said, oh, can you ask the question again? Or, you know, he just takes those bits. It's not, I can imagine. And also, I guess, I don't know how you feel. Like I feel even with some of my podcasts, oh, I should let that person listen to it because they were really nervous, and I should let them listen to it before it goes out. And I always say to people, once it goes out, if there's anything that you don't like, we can edit it again, re-upload to Apple. It'll be fine. But do you feel any kind of like, oh gosh, like when you're editing, is it quite hard to edit because they are pouring their heart out?
Yeah, and then even I listen to the way I've asked people questions, I think, oh, that didn't sound like right, so I'll re-record little bits like that as well. So I probably have more opportunity to kind of scrutinize it. But I offer the same thing often, particularly with it's really emotional and raw content, that I say, look, reflect back over it over the next kind of couple of days. And if you decide, oh, I actually didn't want to share that miscarriage that I talked about because I haven't told a lot of my family or what have you, then I'd say, by all means, let me know and I'll just edit that out. I've only had one occasion where I did air an episode where the lady changed her mind completely and we withdrew it, and that was fine. We just took it down. And then another one that had some issues with the names of some care providers that weren't happy with having their name in it. So I've recently become a little bit more diligent about saying just removing names, and if particularly if it's a contentious issue or there was like a big issue with kind of suing the hospital or a complaint, then we don't name. Yeah, I don't want to be naming and shaming, but at the same time, I also want people to know the procedures and what's offered at particular hospitals. So finding that balance. Yeah, so I'm just trying to be more careful. And again, I guess I started it not thinking it would be as big as it is now. And now I've got a little bit more responsibility to kind of, stay on top of those sorts of things. So they're kind of a couple of issues I've had.
Yeah, and do you have a lawyer?
No, I did. Yeah, I've got a lawyer who drew up my terms and conditions like a couple of years ago, which I probably should double check that now. But I don't, I put out spot fires when they come, really. Like I'm like, oh, I need someone to check this quickly. But I don't really have a system of going through things like that.
I should do that. Oh, no, not at all. No. I was just thinking, oh, gosh, you poor thing, because, yeah, I can imagine sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I do say on the terms of, that I don't give out personal advice, and you need to speak to your care provider, and this show is other people. It's interview format, so it's them telling their story. It's not us telling you to not get the group B strep test or what have you. Like, you need to make that decision yourself.
Yeah, totally. And so outside of like editing, do you use GarageBand or how do you?
Yeah, yep. So I record, which we were laughing about because I'm going to interview you soon. I record in Skype, which is vintage, and then I drop that file into GarageBand and then edit it in there, and then I put it through Orphonics. Do you use that?
No.
Or you don't do the editing? Yeah, so I put the whole file, once I've put the intro and the ads and the outro and everything on, I put that whole file through just an online system called Orphonics. And it balances out the sounds.
Yes. I had my podcast editor in the Good Business group on Facebook talking about sound quality, not just for podcasts, but, you know, doing Zoom calls and all of that. And I think he mentioned something like that.
Yeah. It's quite cheap and it just like scans it through. And then I upload to, I host my site on Libsyn. So I put that on there and I just literally followed what my podcast course recommended. So I don't know if one's better than the other. That's just the one that I started with. So I go with that. And then once it's on Libsyn, then it talks to Apple Podcasts and all the other ones. And I'm not sure if yours is. I'm not on iHeartRadio and a few things like that. I need to kind of sort that out, but sends it off to most podcast apps.
We use Simplecast and it's very similar. I mean, they're all similar. I feel like Libsyn is like the big one. Libsyn and Buzzsprout are the big kind of podcast hosts. But I feel like sometimes I'll get like a little email that says, you are now on, you know, Amazon Music, or you are now on blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I don't look into it as much as I probably should. Outside of those tools that you just mentioned, are there any other kind of tech tools that you just can't live without?
Every now and again, if I have time, I do a wave file for Instagram, like a sound clip of the podcast episode. I like them and I enjoy other people's one, but I feel like Instagram never gives them good organic reach and they take a lot of time and I think, oh, they just never gets much exposure. I'm better off kind of doing a really beautiful birth photo and then having good text, which links them back to the podcast. I find that does better for me. Yeah, there's not a lot of other, I'm not a techie person by nature, so it's not my strong suit. So I just do the bare minimum to get by, really. I've got a really good close girlfriend who I send the episodes to each week and she writes up the blog post. So I don't do full transcriptions, but she takes out key quotes and writes me a blog post and we have that on the webpage. So my friend Jodie does that for me.
Oh, beautiful. And so I guess now that you're almost 5 years in, are you going to celebrate? Obviously, it's Mother's Day. I'm sure you're going to celebrate anyway, but are you going to do something fun for 5 years?
I was going to launch my birth course, but it's not ready. so I'm not sure what I'm going to do next week. It's a big week for my area because it's International Day of the Midwife and it's birthday of the show and then Mother's Day. So, I'll see if I can pull something together now instead of launching my course. But, yeah, it's a good milestone. So I'm not very good as well at celebrating business milestones. I need to try and do that better as well. I think when you work for yourself and you're at home all the time, it's not like, oh, the office goes, yay, we've hit 1 million downloads or, yeah, you've got a book deal or all these sorts of things. You're just kind of at home like, oh, just do the dishes now.
Yeah, I remember when my book came out because we were in lockdown, you know, some beautiful friends sent flowers and plants and like, you know, fruit boxes and stuff. But, yeah, my husband was working, my kids were at childcare in school and I was like, oh, okay, ooh, you have a book out in the world. Cool.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, you can't do anything. So I think we got like takeaway. I don't even think you could get takeaway at that point because Warren Diet does like nothing in terms of takeaway and delivery. So, yeah, I feel you on that part. But, well, I hope you get spoiled for Mother's Day anyway.
Thanks. Hope so. I bought myself some things just in case they don't get it right. This year there's no stall at the school because of COVID, so they're getting hampers. So that'll be interesting. Maybe it'll be better.
Oh, lovely. Well, I hope it's great. So given that you are 5 years in, what would you do differently if you were starting out now?
Well, I think I would have a better, stronger team. I feel like when I'm in the thick of things like getting ready to launch, I kind of think, I need more help. But it's not the right time to hire anyone. I was like, I don't have time to show someone what I need them to do because I just need it to be done yesterday. So I think I would, I know I was just saying I couldn't get someone to edit the show, but I could definitely have someone help with creating better systems early on. I've just sort of moved my email service provider over and I, up until like 3 years in, I wasn't collecting any email addresses or didn't have any kind of free resources to gather details. So that kind of makes me feel a bit sick to think of like, well, I shouldn't reflect back, but I could have had a really, really strong list. I've only been growing that over the last 2 years. So I think there's truth to that. You hear that everywhere in business, like grey list, and you really should. And you're surprised, like the first time I did a quick freebie, how well received it was, and it didn't take a lot of time. So I think definitely do that if you're a business owner listening now. Just make something small. It doesn't have to be a big fancy thing, just a quick PDF, and you'll be surprised how many people sign up.
Yeah, I hear you. And even like I started my email list before I started my business, I'm all over that stuff. But when we started it, the Good Business Group is a Facebook group for small business owners. And I started that in COVID literally as like, oh, this is just going to be where my friends and my clients can gather. didn't think it would do anything. And we just didn't get email lists when we had questions, you know, like, will you not be a jerk? Will you not promote yourself constantly? But we didn't have what's your email address. And yeah, it has over 1,000 people in it. And I, for ages, we didn't capture emails. So yeah, I hear you. And also on Facebook, it's really annoying. Even if people answer it and they give you their email, once they've been accepted, you don't get their email again, like unless you check that in the first like 7 days after they've joined the group.
Oh, it just goes away.
It just goes away. So that was really fun. So yes, I agree with you. Get your emails as early as you can. And then I guess, and this must be a really big one for you, but what are you most proud of from the journey with Australian Birth Stories?
I think things that make me the most happiest is just getting DMs of people saying, I listened to the podcast religiously and I had my baby girl on Tuesday. Or, I mean, sometimes people message me from delivery suites. I've just had like an hour ago, I'm almost like the first to know. And they're just incredibly grateful. And they said, oh, these three things happened and I wouldn't have even known about them if I hadn't listened to the show. So that's just kind of priceless. And I never really imagined that I'd be helping and touching so many people that I'll never meet. And yeah, to have improved their birth outcomes is the biggest possible compliment and achievement, I think.
That is huge. And yeah, and not just theirs, but like I said before, it's the whole community around them. You know, if a woman suffers from postnatal depression or anxiety or depletion, like that's impacting that family, but it's also impacting her parents, you know, in-laws, like everyone around them. So yeah, I think what you're doing is just so fantastic. And on that note, what's next for you? You've got this course coming out, and where can people connect with you?
Yeah, so it's best to find me over at AustralianBirthStories.com, and I'm on Instagram at AustralianBirthStories, and I've just started a new page you can click through from my Instagram page for the birth class, which will be an online antenatal class. And in 2022, I'll have a book. So I just started working on a book as well, which is exciting. Yeah.
Oh, I was so excited for you. And I wasn't in Australia when I had my child for the first time, but I really wish I was. And I was listening to your, well, it would have been before your podcast, but still, I just think what you're doing is so fantastic. And thank you on behalf of all the people that get so much out of what you're putting out there.
Oh, thanks so much.
All right. See you. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Fiona.
Bye. How lovely is Sophie, and just the work she is doing and her passion about really, really making motherhood and postpartum and pregnancy just a much more enjoyable and empowering experience for all women and their partners and their families and communities. It's just a beautiful thing to witness someone do something that they're so passionate about and then that grow on to become such a success in its own right. So I really appreciate Sophie's time in coming onto the podcast. I'd love to know what you took away from that. You may never have thought of this stuff. Perhaps you don't have children, you don't want to have children, and that's totally great. Or perhaps you have gone through, you know, a really traumatic experience and you wish that there was something like Australian Birth Stories around for you. I loved so much of what Sophie had to say. I loved that she started the podcast and she talks about doing it, you know, backwards, which I don't necessarily agree with. But I love that she just started a podcast because she wanted to share that knowledge and share those experiences with other people. I think that's such a fantastic way to start a podcast. I also love that she talked about just doing it at your own pace, not feeling like you have to tackle every single thing tomorrow. Also that she's really realistic about, you know, potentially you will need to keep working part-time while you build your business up, or you will need to be doing all of the things in your business before you're at a position where you can outsource some of that. I do agree with her that understanding how tools work is really important for then being able to train other people and bring them on board. I often talk about SEO when I talk about marketing for your small business or when I'm talking with my clients. And I also always say, you know, I'm not an SEO specialist. However, these are the basics that you need to be across if you're going to go out and outsource your SEO or get an agency or get a freelancer. And the same goes with so many elements of business. It's about educating yourself, taking small steps towards your knowledge bank so that if you do outsource that, you understand how those things work, even if it's not necessarily your zone of genius, in inverted commas. I just also loved that when it comes to things like monetizing the podcast or getting sponsorship, she just sort of went out and made it happen. You know, there wasn't really a, oh my gosh, this has to be so professional and it has to be polished and looking beautiful and be this fancy PDF. She just went out with heart and was like, this is what I'm trying to do. This is my audience. These are my numbers. Let's work together. And I think sometimes we overcomplicate those types of tasks in our business because we are so worried about what could happen and our ego gets really in the way and we let fear stop us from taking action at all. So I was really inspired by the way and the whole approach that Sophie has to building her business. Now, if you have found this inspiring, and I'm sure you have, definitely go over and have a chat with Sophie. You can do that over at australianbirthstories.com, where you can also find a bunch of fantastic guides and courses from everything from postpartum life after birth to discovering motherhood through to breastfeeding. Or you can also find her over on Instagram, Australian Birth Stories, where you'll see so many real life photographs and images and stories from people who have gone through it. And I think, like everything in life, those with lived experience have the most to really teach us. So I thank Sophie again for coming onto the podcast. And I know that her business and what she's putting out there is just helping millions and millions of people enjoy the whole process that is parenthood. Thank you so much for listening. As always, the full show notes will be available over at mydailybusinesscoach.com/podcast/98. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business Coach podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can do that at mydailybusinesscoach.com or hit me up on Instagram at mydailybusinesscoach.